T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Charlie Brennan on The Voice of St. Louis, thanking you for joining us on this edition of Profiles, where we welcome a man who got international attention back in the 1990s when he wrote the book Driven to Distraction. His name, Edward M. Halliwell, who is considered one of the pioneering leaders in the field of ADD, ADHD. Well, most recently, he's taken a look at his own life. How did he become a psychological expert? Well, he's written his memoir. It's called Because I Come From a Crazy Family, The Making of a Psychiatrist. Edward M. Halliwell, MD, joins us on this edition of Profiles.
Welcome to Profiles. From entertainers to athletes, political leaders to entrepreneurs, Profiles gives you an insight into what has made these unique personalities who and what they are today. Now, Profiles on The Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Nice to be with you.
It's great to have you on KMOX, and have you been to St. Louis before?
Oh, I have. I have many times. It's a wonderful city.
Well, let me say welcome back. And you grew up in the northeast part of the country in rarefied air in Chatham, and you went to some of the top boarding schools. In fact, I once actually covered a 8th grade graduation from the Fessenden School.
Where did you attend? Really?
Yeah, it was Patrick Kennedy, the son of Ted Kennedy.
Sure.
And I remember Ted delivered the commencement address at graduation.
No kidding.
And his big line was, "Where's Bear?" which was supposed to be some sort of inside joke for the 8th graders, but I don't remember what it was. But it actually came out more like, "Where's Bear?" But did you go to Phillips Exeter for high school?
Yes, I did.
And then off to Harvard.
Yeah.
And so
people
from the outside might say, "Wow, what a great life." Except that your dad lived with a psychotic disorder, your mother an alcoholic, and your stepfather abusive.
Yes, yeah, abusive alcoholic, yeah.
Yeah, so this was not exactly an easy childhood, even though you were a long-suffering Red Sox fan. That was just the beginning of it.
Yeah, that was the most traumatic of all. And you, St. Louis Cardinals, you certainly broke our dreams in 1967.
We sure did, and we're happy about that. But tell me, Doctor, is this book a long explanation of why you became a psychiatrist?
Well, no. It's really it's a lot of stories, and the first book I've written where I didn't have to give any advice, I just told stories, and it's really a celebration of mental differences. I loved my family. This is not a story of woe is me at all. It's a story of the wonderful, different, some pretty bad people, but mostly wonderful, different people. And if anything, it's my attempt by opening up myself to give other people permission to be open. I think it's time to blow the lid off of stigma. It's time to get rid of, it's sort of the last thing we haven't opened up. It's time for people, I mean, particularly with these recent suicides, it's time for people to be open about the struggles they have. And the fact is, most people with great talent have one or another of these differences, be it depression or an anxiety disorder or substance use disorder, and they tend to hide it. The vast majority of people with one or another mental difference don't get help because they feel ashamed, and so they tend to keep it secret. It's time to blow that up. So I thought, okay, well, I can do that by just personally telling my family story and all the wonderfully crazy people and just do it by example and be very open about it. And I think do the world a favor by example and say, come on, everybody, every family is touched by, we call it mental illness. I prefer to call it mental difference. And because with the so-called mental illness usually comes mental gifts. I tell people I don't treat disabilities. I help people unwrap their gifts. And in order to do that, you usually have to treat some kind of problem. But it's just a crying shame. I think these recent suicides are a perfect example of people not getting the help they needed because of shame and stigma. We need to we need to do something about that. I hope we can start a movement of people coming out of hiding and just let's shine the bright light of knowledge and allow people to be open and celebrate who they are and not have to hide in the darkness.
Well, in your dad's case, he left you when you were about 3.5 years old.
Yes.
Do you remember that day?
I do. I write about it in the book. It was at night, and my mother came in and said, "We're getting divorced." I barely knew what divorce meant. And I felt so sad because I was going to miss him. I loved him very much. And he moved out in the middle of the night. And it was devastating. I didn't lose him entirely. I kept a relationship with him. But then my mother married a man who moved us off to South Carolina. So I didn't see my father and much. And the man that she married turned out to be this abusive alcoholic, and I lived 4 very dark years down there in Charleston with this guy, and those were the darkest years of my life. And fortunately, my mother was brave enough to send me away. It was hard for her to do it, but sent me away to Fessenden at the age of 10. And also, fortunately, my grandmother had enough money to pay for me to go. Of course, it was not very expensive back then in 1960. The tuition was probably about $800 a year or something like that. So it was not a tremendous expense to send a kid to boarding school in those years, not nearly what it is today. But that in many ways saved me. If I hadn't been sent away, I think my life would have been very different.
Yeah, I think so. By the way, your dad, he suffered from, was he manic depressive?
Yeah, called manic depressive then, now bipolar. But and one of the many reasons I believe so strongly in helping people get the right help, he was misdiagnosed schizophrenic and given shock treatment. And then a young doctor came along and said, let's try this guy on this new medication called lithium. And he was basically saved. He spent the rest of his life teaching public school in New Hampshire.
That's the point I was going to get, because you mentioned earlier that it's mental difference, not mental illness, because sometimes people with mental illness, in fact, maybe more often than not, doctor, I'm not sure, can actually make huge contributions. And when your dad died, I believe the teachers at his high school said either the administration allow them to attend your dad's funeral, and by the way, they'd have to take a bus, you know, from New Hampshire into Massachusetts to do that, or they were going to go on strike.
Exactly.
Which kind of indicates he must have been a heck of a teacher.
He was a gifted teacher. He was a beloved teacher. There's a plaque in his honor in the front entrance of that school to this day. And the 2 yellow buses showed up at the Mount Auburn Cemetery in Cambridge, Massachusetts, the day of his funeral, and they closed the school. He was a gifted, gifted teacher. And he found his calling. He found his calling thanks to the right diagnosis and thanks to lithium. And it is the case that with the right help, people with these so-called mental illnesses make tremendous contributions. And it's just it's time for us to show that with the right help, our most gifted people can make tremendous contributions. And substance use disorder is another one that, do you know what percentage of people with substance use disorder get help? 10%. 90% get no help. And we have much better help today than we've ever had before. It's not just 12-step programs now. Now we have medications that can really help people not have the desire to use. And most people don't even know that.
I think one of the best books on living with mental illness was written by William Styrone.
Mm-hmm.
Was it called The Darkness Visible, Memoirs of Madness?
Yeah.
He was just a tremendous writer, of course, writing The Confessions of Nat Turner and Sophie's Choice and many more.
Yeah.
At one point, though, he went to France to pick up an award. And the award would have been given at a restaurant or a ballroom on the first floor. His room was on the 3rd floor. He flew all the way from the United States to this hotel, but he was so depressed he couldn't go down 2 flights of stairs to actually accept the award. And yet what a genius he was.
Well, and our greatest president, Abraham Lincoln, suffered terrible bouts of depression. You know, I mean, when you're in the grip of depression, you can be immobilized. The man that I studied very closely, Samuel Johnson, may be the greatest one of the greatest geniuses ever in the history of the English language, also struggled with terrible depression. So, I mean, you can go down the list. So many writers struggle with depression. So, but that's episodic, you see. Depression doesn't define you, and you have to struggle through it. Though obviously the worst thing that happens in depression is suicide. And so we need to reach the person during their depression and keep them alive through the depression. And then they'll go on to make their great contribution. Instead of defining them as a nutcase or the kind of terrible language we use to describe people who have these various kind of psychological challenges.
Edward M. Hallowell has written a book called Because I Come From a Crazy Family, The Making of a Psychiatrist. We're going to continue our conversation on KMOX in just a moment.
More of Profiles coming up on KMOX. Now, back to Profiles on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
The book has been described as kind of like walking naked down Fifth Avenue. It's called Because I Come From a Crazy Family, The Making of a Psychiatrist. Edward M. Hallowell is with us. Many of our listeners are familiar with his previous work, Driven to Distraction, which was an international bestseller because you were one of the pioneering leaders looking into ADD, ADHD, and other issues. Today, you're taking a look at what you call mental difference, not necessarily mental illness, based with your family. You know, do you have youngsters yourself?
I have three children.
Yeah. I mean, did you send them to boarding school?
No, I didn't. I sent them to private school, which is why I don't have any money today.
Right. Okay. So, folks, you got to go out and buy the book, Amazon.com and elsewhere.
Please do.
I often did wonder, why did people on the East Coast and sometimes elsewhere send their kids to Groton, Phillips Exeter, Fessenden School so they could grow up in dormitories in those early years away from home? You know, there's a short that is preceding Incredibles 2 at the theaters right now.
Yeah.
And it's a real short look at an Asian mother who's having trouble letting go of her son who's growing up. Do you ever wonder, how did parents in the 40s, 50s, and 60s allow their kids to live away from home at prep school?
Well, in my case, it saved my life because what was going on at home was not good. It was chaotic. It was very destructive. It was terrible.
And your mom knew that.
And she knew that. I mean, it was an absolute blessing that I got sent away to boarding school. But in general, and certainly with our children, no way were we going to send them away. There's no way under the sun we'd send them away. We loved, and we created, I mean, the greatest achievement of my life with my wife was giving my children the happy childhood I didn't have. And thank God, my wife Sue, the greatest thing I ever did was marry Sue, and we raised these three wonderful children, Lucy, Jack, and Tucker. They're now 29, 26, and 23, and I mean, I give thanks every single day for the blessing of having these three children. So no way in the world I would have sent them to boarding school.
But at a time, that's what the Kennedys and the Roosevelts and many others did.
Well, it's an import from what the British did as well. That was the way. People didn't want to be bothered by children.
Mm-hmm.
And now... we love children. So, I think the pendulum has swung in a good direction. But for me personally, what was going on in with my stepfather and my mother, with the drinking and the abuse, it was truly a saving grace that I got sent away.
Well, and I think it was in grade school or high school that you did read Albert Camus, as well as Jean-Paul Sartre. And Sartre had a bad childhood.
He did. He did.
He said, "L'enfer, c'est les autres." Yeah. Hell is other people. Do you think that was part of his childhood experience?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think, obviously personal experience influences your philosophical outlook. And Sartre was not exactly a cheerful fellow, and he was also a genius. So he took his personal experience and turned it into existentialism and a really bleak outlook on life, and I felt some of that when I was in high school. But
sure.
my my genetic bequeath from my mother, I suppose, was an inveterate optimism. So I have a tremendously positive outlook on life in spite of the difficulties I encountered growing up, and I have many, you know, severe obstacles that I had to overcome. I'm tremendously optimistic, and I really believe in the power of love, pretty much, the power of connection, the power of the positive energy to help people overcome just about anything.
Well, as the adult child of an alcoholic, what issues did you have to overcome?
Oh my gosh! I mean, there's a score that is called the adverse childhood experiences. If you have a score of 4 or higher, your life is supposed to be pretty much over. And my score is 8.
Wow.
8 out of 10.
Yeah.
So I should not be here. I had, you know, psychotic father, alcoholic mother, alcoholic abusive stepfather, 2 so-called learning disabilities, ADHD and dyslexia, sent away to boarding school at the age of 10. I witnessed abuse on a daily basis, you know, so on and on down the list. But the reason I'm not impaired and unemployed and, you know.
Just the opposite, frankly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is the power of love. I mean, I found great teachers. I found great friends. I found I happen to have a wonderful relationship with God. You know, I discovered God when I was a little boy in Charleston. They would send me off to church in the morning and in a Sunday morning while they would sleep off the night before. And God, I just took to God. I mean, you know, it was not a theological thing at all. It was like God was my imaginary friend, and I felt this tremendous kinship with God, and it stayed with me. And so I really feel that presence and have all along the way. So, you know, I think as long as you feel the connection to be it God or a friend or a cause or a dog for that matter,
really?
As long as you feel, and I think that's the problem with this rash of suicides and school shootings, by the way. I think people are feeling isolated. I think people are feeling alone. And that's why I'm so big on getting rid of stigma and people feeling isolated in their mental struggles. We need to connect. We need to break down the isolation and bring people out of hiding. We need to have a movement of connection, a movement of breaking down isolation and bring people out of their secret sad places. And when we do that, we'll see the school shootings go down. We'll see the suicides go down, and we'll see the ravages of mental illness disappear, and people will become productive, and they'll become happy in themselves. And it's what happened to me for sure. But I think if we start a national movement, it could happen to millions and millions of people.
Well, I'll tell you what, I don't think, and you know, I'm an amateur here, no expert, and I don't have the benefit of any research doctor, but it seems to me that social media may be hurting the cause, because when you go onto social media, first of all, there are a lot of angry people who are responding to some of your tweets angrily like never before. But then on Facebook, you might see a friend who posts her new Facebook photo, and then everybody says, oh, you're so beautiful, you're so beautiful, you're so beautiful. Well, what if another person posts a photo and nobody says, oh, you're so beautiful, you're so beautiful, you're so beautiful? How does that person feel? So as opposed to being social, it may make you more antisocial, frankly.
Yeah. It's a two-edged sword, you know, and if we can try to bring back the human connection instead of the electronic connection.
Right.
If we can try to have face-to-face encounters, you know, I think we'll be better off. And I'm not opposed to social media at all. I just don't want to see it replace human interaction.
Yeah, right. Well, I'll say this. When it comes to dogs, for example, or cats, do you think that they keep you in the present and they kind of prevent you kind of like little kids, from thinking about the future or the past?
Now, everyone who comes to see me in my office leaves with a prescription for a dog.
Seriously?
Yes.
Yeah.
Everybody should have a dog.
Yeah, Cardinal manager Tony La Russa. I'm sorry to bring up the St. Louis Cardinals, although the Red Sox have had their way with the Cardinals in more recent years. But in your formative years, the Red Sox were dominant. Anyway, La Russa is
the Cardinals were dominant in my formative years.
That's what I meant to say, yeah. Tony La Russa is a big fan of animals. In fact, heads up the Animal Rescue Foundation.
Oh, wonderful.
And he's pairing dogs with soldiers who are experiencing PTSD.
Oh, that's a brilliant move. The dogs are the greatest healers in the world. I firmly believe that. The dogs are God's greatest creation.
But, you know, with the suicide, it's not a new thing. You read a lot of Albert Camus. The first line in The Myth of Sisyphus is, there is but one true philosophical question, and that is whether or not to commit suicide.
Yes, 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 yes. And we want people to come firmly down on the side of, I want to live. And if you have a dog, you want to live.
But what if you really don't enjoy your life? I know you're a psychiatrist.
Well, if you don't enjoy your life, I'll tell you the antidote. Never worry alone. If you don't enjoy your life, talk to somebody and get a dog. I'm not being silly. I'm not being simple-minded. If you don't enjoy your life, talk to somebody. Get a dog. Join a group. Get out of yourself. You know, don't sit alone and worry. That's when people kill themselves. When you worry alone, that's when suicides happen.
The words of Edward M. Hallowell, whose new book, Because I Come from a Crazy Family, The Making of a Psychiatrist, is the topic of our conversation today. Charlie Brennan on The Voice of St. Louis.
More of Profiles coming up on KMOX. Now, back to Profiles on The Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Edward M. Ned Hallowell, MD, is with us today. He was the best-selling author of Driven to Distraction, and today he's come out with a autobiographic memoir, Because I Come from a Crazy Family, The Making of a Psychiatrist. All that glitters is not gold, because you were going to the best schools in the land, Fessenden, and after that, that's a very nice grade school, middle school in Newton, Massachusetts. In fact, some of the Kennedys have gone there. We explained that. And then it was off to Phillips Exeter. Some of the most famous Americans attended Exeter Academy. And then it was off to Harvard, which needs no introduction to any audience. And as we say, the grass is always greener on the other side. Some people might say, oh, poor little rich boy. And there he is on the cover right there. But mental illness can afflict any family, rich, poor, name the group.
Right. Absolutely. And one of the reasons for my writing this was to help people come out of hiding about this stuff. And there's no shame. In fact, I feel very proud of my family, my crazy family. They were wonderful people. And sure, the crazy part may have been impairing, but crazy doesn't define the entire person. These were brilliant people. My brother was at the top of his class at Harvard, and he went crazy and it impaired him, but he was also able to do wonderful things. My uncle was near the top of his class at Harvard but he was crippled by an anxiety disorder that meant he couldn't do a lot of things, but he was also able to do a great deal. Others, had problems with substance use. And so, it hurt them, but they were also wonderfully able and talented. And this is the point I want to make, that we do a great disservice by surrounding these conditions with the stigma that they're surrounded by. And these issues touch almost every family. So my hope is that by my being very open about it, others will feel permission to be open as well and celebrate the great banquet of life, the great diversity of life that, it's hard to find Joe Normal out there. You know, most people have their issues, and let's be open about it and not spend a lot of effort trying to hide it and put it into closets where it only can become worse.
Do you mind if I ask you a couple of questions also on ADD and ADHD?
Sure, which, sure.
As we said earlier, Driven to Distraction was the book that really put you on the map,
mm-hmm.
because you put ADD and ADHD on the map.
Mm-hmm.
And it's similar in the sense that I think you've said that ADHD is a trait, mm-hmm. not a mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people with ADD or ADHD try to hide it, either among their kids, they don't want to admit it, or when they're children, you know, who wants to admit that, right?
Right.
It's kind of similar to other disorders, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And we certainly shouldn't hide that. Some of the most productive people in the world have this condition. I mean, the man who founded JetBlue is very ADD and very proud of it. The current CEO of AOL and Yahoo, it's called Oath, has ADD, very proud of it. You know, and the Hollywood is full of it. Most entrepreneurs have it. So it's not a condition that you should in any way feel ashamed of, that you should just learn how to manage it. If you don't know how to manage it, it can be very impairing. It can ruin your life if you don't know how to manage it. But if you do know how to manage it, it can become a tremendous asset.
Are you concerned that too many young people are taking medications with regard to ADD or ADHD?
I think that's a red herring. You know, we make medication the issue. The issue is not medication. The issue is proper diagnosis and treatment. So, you know, if you don't have it, you shouldn't be taking medication. If you do have it, you shouldn't be taking medication if the medication doesn't work. So, again, the real issue is proper diagnosis and proper use of medication. If the medication helps and doesn't cause side effects, by all means use it. If the medication causes side effects, you shouldn't be taking it. So the need is for education of doctors and proper use of medication.
But you've also said that exercise and diet can be helpful for the boys and girls with ADD and ADHD.
Oh, yeah. It's never just medication. It's a comprehensive treatment plan that includes education, coaching, exercise, meditation, very helpful, nutritional supports, a comprehensive treatment plan that may or may not include medication.
What kind of nutrition would be important to somebody living with ADHD?
Avoiding junk food, right at the top of the list. Avoiding
sugar.
Avoiding sugar, avoiding junk food. Obviously, stay away from drugs and alcohol, which are people with ADD are very prone toward substance use disorder.
Uh-huh. And do you think that children with ADD or ADHD have lifelong issues or challenges that they have to address?
Absolutely. ADHD is a chronic condition. Doesn't go away. But its advantages also don't go away. And the advantages tend to be an entrepreneurial spirit, creativity, originality. You know, they tend to have a sparkle, a pizzazz, as long as it doesn't get beaten out of them in schools.
Because they can develop low self-esteem if they're considered irresponsible or whatever.
If the school doesn't understand it, if the school beats it out of them, if the school is chronically putting them down, then they can lose that pizzazz, that sparkle. So that's why it's so important to identify it early on, to have a strength-based approach. You know, what I say is, look, you're very lucky. You've got a race car for a brain. It's just that you've got bicycle brakes. But don't worry, I'm a brake specialist. Mm-hmm. So race car brain, bicycle brakes. And the race car brain is the upside. The bicycle brakes is the downside. And then you go to see a brake specialist like me, learn how to strengthen your brakes, and then you become a winner. But a race car with no brakes, that's a dangerous kind of brain.
It seems easily understandable to me that someone who might be the child of an alcoholic would have a temper because he or she would kind of learn growing up that anger and erratic behavior and bursts of temper are ordinary or normal. But why would someone with ADD or ADHD have a short temper?
Bicycle brakes. See, it's genetic. You don't have the inhibitory circuits. You're born with your inhibitory circuits set lower. So you have this powerful brain, this race car for a brain, but your brakes just aren't strong enough to control it. So it's on a genetic basis. You don't have the brakes. You don't have the inhibitory circuits. So you have to work on strengthening those brakes. And that's the challenge over your growing up years, to learn to strengthen those brakes. It has nothing to do with whether your parent was alcoholic or not. It's just the genetics of learning inhibition.
Is cognitive behavior therapy helpful? And if so?
Not so much. CBT is the answer to everything these days. Cognitive behavioral therapy is sort of the universal remedy for everything. Sure, it's not going to do any harm, but it's in coaching. And that's you could call that cognitive behavioral therapy if you want to. But what you need is consistent structure.
Mm-hmm.
And however you get it at home and at school, consistent structure, reminders, and done without shame and humiliation, which is hard because these kids can be exasperating. So you want to be consistently structuring, reminding, keeping on track, setting up procedures and routines that the kids will gradually over time begin to internalize.
Edward M. Hallowell has written Because I Come From a Crazy Family, had also written Driven to Distraction. We're talking about the making of a psychiatrist, and we'll come back in a moment on KMOX.
More of Profiles coming up on KMOX. Now, back to Profiles on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Edward M. Hallowell is with us today. Because I Come From a Crazy Family, the making of a psychiatrist, with at least two connections to Missouri that I gleaned from reading your book. Number one, it seems like you were a fan of the love song of J. Alfred Prufrock, which was written by T.S. Eliot, who grew up in St. Louis.
Yes, absolutely.
Do you know there was a Prufrock furniture in the late 19th century, early 20th century in downtown St. Louis?
No kidding.
And I'm convinced that's the only way Eliot could have come up with that rather rare name, Prufrock.
I'll bet you're right. I did not know that. That's incredible. There was a Prufrock furniture.
There was indeed. And I might also add that George Blackburn, I think, had a Kansas City or a Joplin connection. Blackburn was...
He did.
Did he grow up in Joplin?
He may have. I know he was from the Midwest.
He was one of your medical mentors,
yes,
was he not?
Yes, he was indeed, absolutely.
He was at Harvard.
Yeah.
An esteemed, what would we say, nutritionist?
Well, he was a surgeon, and then he got a PhD in biochemistry. I would just get excited to see him. He took no prisoners. He was always going for the gold.
You credit family members as well as people like Blackburn with being...
Absolutely. They saved me. I was destined to die young, and because of people like George Blackburn, I didn't.
Yeah. If you just joined us, folks, our guest grew up in New England, but also spent some time, about four very dark years, in Charleston, South Carolina. Mm-hmm. There, with an abusive stepfather, his mother, an alcoholic, his father... Also, at the time, we called that manic depressive. Today, we would call that bipolar. And your parents divorced when you were 3.5 years old. You're right. People might have said, this guy is heading to nothing good. But just the opposite. You became a world-renowned author and psychiatrist. It's really a testament to you as well as those around you, I think.
Well, not to me.
Why not you?
Well, the grace of God and the people who helped me. I mean, it really... I really thank every day the teachers I had, the friends I had, the dogs I had, and the good Lord. I mean, and I'm not I don't want people to think I'm pushing religion. I'm not. I'm pushing gratitude, I guess. I'm pushing the power of love. I'm really pushing the power of love because I do believe. The power of connection, the power of reaching out. It is isolation that kills, and it is connection that saves. I'm totally convinced of that, that it is connection that saves. And that's why I hope with this book to bring people out of hiding. I hope we can reduce stigma. I hope we can reduce isolation. I hope people will come out of hiding with whatever condition they have, because isolation kills people. It really does. And connection saves people. It's that simple. It is that simple. And it is fear and isolation and shame that kills people. And it is connection that saves people.
One time you did visit your father in, I believe it was one of the mental hospitals in Massachusetts.
Yeah, the one time he had a relapse, I visited him. He'd gone off his lithium. And
yes.
I was in college and I visited him and went out for a walk, and he wanted to hang himself. And I said, Dad, don't do that. You should live. And so he said, okay, I won't hang myself. And I took him back onto the ward.
He really had the rope at that time.
He had the rope. He said, should I hang myself? And I said, no, that's a real bad idea, Dad. Don't do that.
So did a young Ned Hallowell go back to his classmates and relate the experience, or did he bury it for a while?
I didn't go back and tell my classmates. I told some relatives, but I didn't walk around Harvard Yard saying my dad wanted to kill himself, no.
Well, how open should people be with regard to these matters in 2018?
As open as they possibly can be, because there's no shame in it. I mean, any more than you should be ashamed of having high blood pressure. You should, or any more than you should be ashamed of having arthritis. You know, you shouldn't be ashamed of having depression, episodic depression. You shouldn't be ashamed of having ADHD. Of ADHD, I think you should be proud, because it probably means you've got all kinds of wonderful ideas. Episodic depression probably means you're a very deep and interesting person. You know, bipolar disorder, the same thing. You know, we need to be identifying the upside of these various conditions, and instead of trying to hide them, you know.
Do these conditions generally tend toward certain groups of people? For example, I'm Irish American, and some people say that the Irish have a dark side.
My teacher at Harvard, my tutor for 2 years, was Irish American. He would say to me, the Irish are fundamentally crazy. Well, he said it. I'm not saying it. So, but you know, every ethnic group has its tendencies, and you have to be careful about generalizing. But as a group, my experience, the Irish also are terrified of getting help. They're terrified of seeing a psychiatrist. And that's to their great detriment. They won't seek help. And, you know, but a lot of people are that way. A lot of people are that way. My ethnic group, WASPs, are the same way. We won't get help. We scorn the notion of seeking help. Now, that's changing. Thank God that's changing. That's changing. And we really need to start a movement to change that, because it kills people. This is not a low stakes matter. It's very high stakes.
45,000 suicides in this country annually.
Yeah, and most people don't get help. Most people don't get help. This is, in no field of medicine does the consumption of the science lag further behind the science than in mental health, than in psychiatry.
You, I'm sure, are very aware of a St. Louisan who was on the presidential ballot in 1972.
Yes. Yeah.
Until it was announced that he was battling depression. And of course, I'm talking about
Thomas Eagleton.
You got it.
Yeah. It's time for that to end. Mm-hmm. It's time for us to stand up and say, look, these are some of our most talented and gifted people. And it's time for them to stop suffering in silence and shame. Let's bring it out of the closet. Let's acknowledge our greatest president, Abraham Lincoln, suffered from major depression. Let's our the greatest statesman of the 20th century, Winston Churchill, suffered from heaven knows what, but a combination of depression, bipolar, substance use disorder. You know, let's blow the lid off stigma. Let's let everybody celebrate humanity in all its full glory.
Because I come from a crazy family, The Making of a Psychiatrist, written by the renowned Edward M. Hallowell. Can't thank you enough for joining us here in St. Louis, and good luck to those Red Sox, unless they're playing the Cardinals.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Profiles. If you missed any of this episode, or to hear other profiles, go to KMOX.com and click On Demand.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.